This is an Artist Journey podcast, the podcast for people thriving and creating as artists. I'm your host, Malcolm Dewey, and let's begin. Welcome to episode 33 of an Artist Journey podcast. It's great to be chatting to you again. And in this episode, I'm going to be diving into the controversial topic right now of the Copyright Amendment Bill in South Africa. Joining me in this episode is intellectual property law expert André Meiberg. André Meiberg is a South African lawyer who is currently in Switzerland advising on copyright legislation and policy internationally. He is an advisor to Delro, who manages the visual arts mandate for a number of artists in South Africa. And he has been appointed by Parliament as an expert to comment on the Copyright Amendment Bill. Welcome, André.
Thank you. Pleasure to be on.
It's great to have you on the show, André, and especially to help us get a bit more insight into the controversial Copyright Amendment Bill. But before we dive into that, perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about yourself. You're a South African lawyer currently in Switzerland and advising on intellectual property law. Perhaps you can tell our listeners a little bit more about your background.
Well, we had an opportunity to come to Switzerland where I found myself working especially in the field of copyright law internationally. And although I do my work on an international basis, my colleague, who's also South African, and I have a lot of interest in what happens in South Africa. He and I are both the copyright legal advisors to both Dalro and to the Publishers Association of South Africa. So we're very much involved in what happens in South Africa.
André, one of the things that you are involved in right now is acting as an expert and advisor on the new Copyright Amendment Bill. What exactly are you doing there in relation to that proposed amendment?
Yes, it needs a bit of explanation about where the bill comes from. It was introduced to Parliament in May 2017. It was subject to a lot of criticism for having been extremely poorly written. Notwithstanding, the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee decided that the topics raised in the bill were so important that it would accept the bill as a Bill of Parliament and then rewrite it and try and improve it. And as part of the process that they had in mind, they thought of appointing a panel of experts to comment at the end of the drafting process on whether the provisions of the bill pass constitutional muster and whether they are in compliance with international treaties to which South Africa is party, because the only way that South African artists' work or the copyright in their works can be recognized internationally is through these international treaties. And these treaties, while allowing a lot of flexibility for member states to write their own copyright laws, do have a certain parameters that those copyright laws must fall within. And so it was the job of this panel to look at whether the provisions of the bill meet the requirements of those treaties. The panel members put in their opinions at the beginning of October. We were unanimously we were all of the same view that there were severe issues with treaty compliance with the bill. So that is where the panel comes from. The panel has already done its work. The expectation is that Parliament is in the process of considering the expert opinions. They're doing some having some research done themselves with a view to preparing a final version of the bill in about mid-November, which, if that all works, would then be introduced to the National Assembly at the end of November.
Before we go into the proposed amendments in a bit more detail, the current position in South Africa as far as copyright law and artists is concerned is all governed by quite an old piece of legislation from, I think, 1978. That's still the position?
Yes, it's governed by the Copyright Act of 1978. It has, of course, been amended throughout the years, although it was last amended in 2002. And the big amendment that now needs to be made is to update the Copyright Act to introduce the so-called digital rights of copyright. Those are the rights of copyright that would enable copyright owners to exercise their rights in relation to uses on the internet, for example, but also any other electronic and digital uses.
In a nutshell, we've got to bring ourselves up to date to cope with the digital world and, of course, the internet and how that can be used to the benefit of our artists, but also protect them in this new world order, you could say. I can also must also say it's pretty clear that, as you mentioned, a lot of criticism is being leveled at the process. And one of the accusations is poor drafting. Another accusation is lack of consultation with interested bodies. What is, as far as your point of view at this stage, would you say these are fair criticisms?
Before I delve into that, I think let's just quickly have a look at what the amendment sets out to do and where it came from. So, as I mentioned, the digital rights, and the amendment will now introduce the digital rights in respect of all copyright works, including artistic works. It was also meant to address the situation of composers and performers of music, which followed a judicial commission that finished its work as long ago as 2011. The bill goes way beyond that, though. They've used the opportunity of the recommendations of this judicial commission, which was headed by retired Judge Farlam, to bring in a very wide range of exceptions to copyright, those that relate to uses of copyright works, such as reproductions being the simple example, where there would be no permission required from the copyright owner or the visual artist, who would normally be a copyright owner of his or her works, and therefore with no remuneration. Now, our copyright law has always had exceptions, such as the right of quotation, the right to reporting on current events, illustrations for teaching, and that sort of thing. But these new copyright exceptions, including fair use, which we'll get into later, no doubt, introduce a whole new plan that will that could well severely disrupt copyright industries, perhaps not with as much of an impact for the visual artist, but certainly in other fields. So when it comes to the so the Act set about to do a lot of things. And the disappointment was that if one looks into the background, there was pretty little research carried out apart from the studies of the Farlam Commission. There's been no real impact assessment to talk of. There's a government-regulated impact assessment system where there is, on the face of it, a report, but just a quick read of it shows that it really had no independent research, and it doesn't really show any indications that economic impact was considered at all. The Act itself ended up being a repetition, I'm afraid, of a number of ideological positions on exceptions to copyright, which just do not do not relate to the improvement of the position of authors, artists, composers, and performers. And that whole concept has really taken over the bill, and I think this is a major concern. So the bill introduced in May 2017 was very poorly written, as I said, and Parliament has in the meantime tried to improve it as best it can, but unfortunately in the when I say Parliament, I mean the Portfolio Committee for Trade and Industry in Parliament. Unfortunately, they've perpetuated a number of the most serious errors in the bill, and they've made quite a few of their own as well, leading one to a very a difficult situation. So there have been consultations, but there has been a concern that where there have been responses to those consultations, even to the point of pointing out basic errors, that these have not been taken into account for reasons unknown to people participating in the process.
Andrew, one of the controversial issues relates to user rights. Can you just perhaps explain what user rights means in the in this context, and why is there so much upset about user rights as proposed in the amendment?
Well, to start off with, in South African law, there is no such thing as users' rights. The concept of users' rights is actually a construct of the courts in Canada, of the Supreme Court in Canada, which describe copyright exceptions as rights of users. So if you have a visual artist who's created a work who has a right in that work, and copyright exceptions are passed, one would find a situation where a person who wants to make a reproduction of that work without permission may rely on copyright exception and then claim that it is his or her right as a user of the work. So from an academic perspective, this concept of users' rights is very controversial and contested by a lot of academics who specialize in copyright in South Africa.
What some of the critics seem to be suggesting, or perhaps in some of the more sensationalist articles I've read recently, are suggesting that if somebody raises a point that a reproduction in whatever manner it has a public interest, that public interest might come before the individual creator's interests. Is that?
That is pretty much the argument. And of course, these international conventions I referred to earlier, in fact, provide for that. So there is call it a test under the Bern Convention on Copyright called the three-step test. That allows copyright exceptions for special cases. And the question then is whether a certain public benefit is in fact a special case or not. And that question is not that easily answered. We find the statement often made that education is a public interest, and therefore if one looks at the bill, it seems that copyright nearly has to be removed from the educational field to start off with. But the question is, how do authors who write for educational works get paid? How do people who illustrate for educational works get paid if there are so many exceptions for the purpose of education? There has always been an exception for illustration for teaching, for example, and that makes a lot of sense, that you have a situation in a classroom and a teacher makes a copy to demonstrate something to the class. That's never been an issue. But education as a concept, is that in fact, if one considers it seriously, a public interest situation, Or is it a case of institutions in the educational field trying to save on not having to pay people who create works for educational purposes? So it's a question that's not that easy to answer, and that is why I had this role in adjudicating the three-step test against the numerous copyright exceptions that there are.
Taking that as one of the examples, one of the, it seems perhaps the controversies that underlie some of the opposition here is that we are getting, as South Africa, an international dispensation is trying to be rammed down our throat, as it were, and bring in legal provisions that are going to be beneficial to international corporations, perhaps, or companies that can use copyright or potentially copyright information. Now,
well, I wouldn't call it an international dispensation. I would rather call it that South Africa is being set up as an experiment, because one of the objects for exceptions that is not mentioned in the bill, but which has been commented on frequently, is making copyright less relevant for use on the internet. And you find a lot of technology companies making use of copyright works in order to advance their own business models. The classic case in the US was the so-called Google Books case, where Google offered to a large number of participating libraries in the United States to scan all of their collections for free as long as they could keep a copy. And they kept a copy and thereby got the entire book collection of all of these libraries, millions of books, without having paid, you know, without an author or a publisher having received a cent for it. Now, one has to realize that, you know, people justifiably say that when you're involved with computer applications, you're always going to make a copy. And again, people recognize that. There are perfectly acceptable exceptions relating to making temporary copies as part of a technological process. But in this case, the broad, flexible exception that exists in the United States that goes under the name of fair use has been used for this far broader purpose to enable Google to come up with its Google Books service so that you can read snippets. But it's not a service that is licensed. It's not a service that has permissions of copyright owners, but the broad exceptions have been interpreted in such a wide way in the US in order to allow it. The fair use being proposed for South Africa is far broader than that. The United States has got, I think, four illustrative purposes of what they can apply fair use to. The South African bill has got seven and doesn't look like the US version at all. So it's a far broader thing. And from that perspective, we are very worried that, you know, South Africa is being set up to become an experiment in a brave new world.
Let's get into the fair use issue perhaps a little deeper. It's been suggested by American experts on the subject of fair use that these fears that are being raised are entirely unfounded. Fair use doesn't mean that an academic book, for instance, can be copied by an institution and handed out for free to their students and, you know, examples like that. It's only fair use is not going to be used to undermine a copyright holder's rights to royalties, etc. Are these allegations that are being thrown against fair use, are they fair? Is it going to threaten artists?
Artists, the problems that you mention here, or the issues that you mention here, relate more to writing literary works and book publishing than they do to visual artists. The impact on visual artists will be a bit different. But just to touch on education, yes, you're right. It doesn't allow whole-scale copying of textbooks, but what it does allow and include, there are also additional educational exceptions that form part and parcel of this whole package. It's not just the fair use. What these provisions together do allow is the taking of excerpts from existing books, and that you could find institutions making new textbooks compiled of excerpts from other books, and that those compilations of excerpts will then be used to substitute buying textbooks in the traditional sense that we understand it. And where those excerpts are made without permission and without remuneration, then the anticipation is that that content that is so copied will actually over a period of time start drying up. I may quickly mention that PricewaterhouseCoopers carried out a study for publishers on precisely this point and came to the conclusion that for the publishing industry, at any rate, the consequences would be pretty devastating. For visual artists, it would be quite different and quite interesting, actually. Recently we've had we read in the press about the exhibition by Hank Willis Thomas, the American artist, who came to South Africa with an exhibition, and one of his works contained copies of photos taken by South African photojournalist Graham Williams, who went to the exhibition and suddenly found excerpts of his work contained in the Thomas artwork, with there never having been a question about permission or anything like that. And he was understandably upset about it. In South Africa, it is a bit of a borderline situation. The question of whether an artist can do that or not always ends up being with saying it depends. You know, how much of the artwork was taken and so forth. You know, we all know Picasso's statement that off of what did he say? Art is all about theft or something to that effect. The question is, when are you copying? When are you inspired? And when are you making an unlawful copy? In South Africa, it's borderline. In the United States, thanks to a case of about 4 years ago, that's fine. You can make these collages under fair use without seeking permission and, more importantly, without recognizing the original artist.
Andre, that particular photograph you're referring to, if I can just for benefit of people listening, that is the one that I think was taken in 1990, showing police resting on the top of an armored Casper vehicle, and there were township children other side the fence taunting the police marching up and down and etc.
Yes,
and the photograph was in color, and it depicted that. And then the artist who took that image converted it largely to a black and white image, with the children in the foreground in high definition black and white, and then the police in the background in a sort of faded motif. And when I look at the artist's work, it seemed on the knee-jerk reaction would be, well, that is, yes, it has been manipulated, but it is clearly recognizable as from the original photograph. And I understand what you're saying is that in the American point of view, that would be entirely permissible as fair use. Is that true?
Yes, there was a case on that called Carrieu versus Prince, a case of an American photographer. I think he went to Jamaica or somewhere and took pictures of Rastafarians, and the artist came and touched those photos up in exactly the same way. And based on the fair use principles, the court came to the conclusion that that was not an infringement of copyright. And we often find these situations in South Africa. As I say, the question is, you know, when are you inspired by someone else's work, and when have you crossed the line and taken a copy? And certainly that line in the United States is drawn quite a bit further away than the line is drawn in South Africa.
And certainly, I would agree with that, because, you know, we perhaps all have stories of people being extremely offended if there's even a suggestion of a similar creative style
we've
being
seen
used.
That often, yes.
That is going to potentially a bitter pill that South African artists are going to have to swallow. And we're going to see a lot of similar things appearing in galleries simply because maybe they sell well.
Yes. And so very often the I think the sentiment on the part of the original photographer in this case is, you know, hey, this guy is selling the artwork in a gallery. He's going to make money out of it. But it's based on my work. My work is a central feature of what he's done. It is a copyright work. It is a work that is under copyright, and I should be getting some money for this.
Can I perhaps suggest another few examples? An artist who has perhaps made a painting, let's say there's a political impact, and a lecturer or perhaps anyone who's giving some sort of instruction, it could be about history, it could be about art or anything, makes perhaps a few hundred copies of that, photographic copies of a painting, and prints them out and hands them out to students. Is that would, I understand, be fall under fair use? There'd be no problem with that.
Well, there is always still a question of degree. When you're making hundreds of copies, then you're starting to impact on the market for the work, and even that would not be permissible under fair use. Yes, certainly the issues that in South Africa are now borderline or even permissible under the current exceptions of quotation and illustration for teaching, that situation opens up a bit more, and one would look at a situation where there are copies made for classroom use. It's always in the South African context currently, it's always qualified by the extent justified for the purpose. And so long as the purpose, of course, is legitimate, you know, in case of illustration for teaching. The problem comes in here because the fair use exception in South Africa specifically is so much broader than in the United States. For including items like education, as I mentioned, also illustration on its own, simply illustration is a fair use purpose. I believe that was actually a misdrafting, but there it is. In addition, there are very broad exceptions in favor of educational institutions and also libraries. People would at least argue, and I think here's another thing, it's not a case of whether ultimately it would be found whether such an action is permissible or not, but it certainly opens up the argument that it is, and you end up in court for years. We're coming to an end of a fair use case in the United States, which has run for about 10 years now. So it doesn't really help to have these words in an act where you end up having to contest them, and where a judge has to make an evaluation on each and every case. You end up in a case that lasts for years and then is appealed and so forth and so forth. So it creates uncertainty in that respect. So yes, the bill, if passed, would allow more of that, would expand those opportunities, but it would also at the same time create more uncertainty, and allow people to benefit, you know, non-copyright owners to benefit from the uncertainty that it has created.
Yes. Perhaps a few other, just if anyone is thinking about real-life daily situations, they find themselves in situations like going into a gallery or at a public exhibition, perhaps, let's say at an art festival, and everybody's got a camera on their phone these days, and they start taking photographs of the artworks and putting it on their social media, maybe on a blog article if they are a blogger and they're writing about what they've seen at the art show or at a gallery. Things like that would be okay, I presume, under the...
Let me say, put it this way. It shouldn't be okay because the exceptions, the fair use exceptions don't really allow for that sort of thing. The use has to be transformative. That is one of the fair use tests. And simply putting a photo of an artwork on a blog is not a transformative use, and that's quite clear even in the United States. And it would not benefit individuals in that type of situation. But you mentioned galleries, and that's extremely interesting because the bill also provides a set of exceptions for libraries, archives, museums, and galleries. Now, that is a bit of a strange extension, something that I haven't seen internationally. You know, certainly there are exceptions for libraries and archives, and exceptions for museums is a relatively new development. But galleries are very often commercial entities, and galleries will now have the right to make reproductions of the works that appear in their galleries for certain specific purposes. Now, those reproductions have traditionally always been licensed by Dalro. A gallery would maybe want to make thumbnails available as to what works there are. And normally these works are licensed. So a topic we haven't discussed yet is the very large network of licensing that happens in the background to permit the kind of things that you see coming from galleries and so forth. It is now proposed that these reproductions will happen by way of exception. Now, normally, if an artist exhibits in a gallery, there will be a contract, and maybe the artist will have a specific clause dealing with how the gallery is entitled to make use of his or her works to advertise the exhibition. That's quite normal. Now, yes, this will be governed by an exception. And to make it even worse, there is a clause right at the end of the bill that overrides all contracts, that says anything that is permitted by the Act and that is not an infringement of copyright cannot be overridden by a contract. So, in other words, a contractual term stating otherwise would be unlawful. So, if your artist has a contract with a gallery for an exhibition and the artist expected that there would be a contract setting out the format and the style and the credits that need to be given if the gallery wants to make reproductions of the artwork, for instance, for advertising the show in newspapers and so on, the gallery no longer needs that. The gallery can make those reproductions in terms of the exceptions. And even worse, if they tried to regulate it by contract, those contractual terms would be unenforceable. This is one of the detrimental impacts for visual artists, especially the successful ones, in dealing with galleries. And I think one of the points that have been made so far is to ask the Portfolio Committee, why are galleries even included in this list of exceptions? They are simply not in the same class as libraries.
Yes, perhaps you can just go into the licensing mechanisms that apply in the background for various works that can be used by organizations. There is a licensing network that sort of acts as an in-between to ensure that royalties, etc., are recovered and paid to artists for works being used in a public domain. Now, with the gallery producing a advertising pamphlet and reproducing artworks, previously that had to be approved by a licensing entity?
Well, the licensing structure for visual artworks in South Africa is entirely voluntary. A number of very prominent artists, or the artists are deceased, so they're heirs. Also, some very famous South African cartoonists run their own licensing operation. So, if you want to make a reproduction to illustrate something, you go to that artist. It's not up to anybody to run one's own licensing operation, because it needs a lot of legal skill and a lot of knowledge of the industry. And so artists would then, if they want to, contract that out to an organization like Dalro. I believe Dalro is the only one that has a visual art license scheme at the moment. So for certain secondary uses of visual artworks, one could mandate Dalro to accept all proposals for licensing and to give the permissions that are necessary, and they've got a price list that sets out how much they charge for each kind of use of their works. But this is all done on a voluntary basis. This differs considerably from the situation that we have, say, in the music world, where you have two collecting societies, say Samro and Sampra, who, for instance, deal with the a public playing of musical works, and that licensing structure is far more developed and sophisticated. So for visual artists, it's still entirely a voluntary thing. If an artist believes that there is a market for that sort of licensing, then, as I said, they can do it themselves, or they could look at an organization like Dalro to do it for them.
Right. Before moving on to the next topic, the fair use system, if we look at perhaps America, the suggestion is being made that it should be beneficial to artists, authors, etc., bearing in mind the reality of the internet. How can South African artists and authors, etc., ensure that fair use is going to be beneficial to them, instead of this scary situation that we are being told about now?
That really has to do with the way fair use is being introduced by the bill. Fair use in itself, within a certain legal context, is not in itself harmful to copyright industries or creative work. The argument that you're referring to is precisely the type of argument that creators of works don't need to get copyright clearance if they want to create new works, up to a certain point, of course, and that exception is determined, is a more flexible exception, and arguably not as rigid as the current fair dealing exceptions that we have in South Africa at the moment. The difference lies in the context. In the United States, you have prescribed statutory and damages, or penalty damages. So people don't lightly rely on fair use in the US, because if you get it wrong and your fair use defense fails, and you're held to have infringed the work, you are liable for a penalty of, I think it's about $5,000 per instance. So people are very careful in the United States. Now, that does not apply in South Africa. There is a statutory damages provision, but historically it's hardly – I don't think it has been used. And therefore, there's not that encouragement to think clearly about whether a given reproduction or adaptation of somebody else's work is going to be fair use or not. People are just going to do it. Mm-hmm. In addition, we're sitting with that contract override clause that applies equally to the fair use provision. So there's really no incentive for people who want to make reproductions or adaptations of other people's copyright works to abide by the law. They'll just say, oh, it's fair use, take me to court. Now, taking one to court is, as you know, more easily said than done. And especially when you're dealing with something like fair use, where you have to create a whole new body of law. Bear in mind, in the United States, they've had a body of law on fair use for 200 years. We have had one case dealing with fair dealing exceptions in South Africa, precisely because the parameters are so well known. So now suddenly one finds the prospect a lot of litigation, and people, artists and authors, are not going to litigate. It'll be very, very rare when they litigate. And as a result of that, you will not get a body of case law that will tell you when a specific instance is fair use or not. Now, the bill does introduce a new tribunal, but chances are that the expertise that is needed to advance a case before a tribunal is so big that you may as well be going to the High Court anyway. The impact of it is not yet known, and having a strong and successful tribunal would be critical to introduce, together with the fair use exception as it is currently proposed in South Africa. So the argument, as I say, is not so much about fair use itself, but the legal context into which it is introduced and the terms of which on which it is being introduced in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. And how it will be enforced by this tribunal.
Well, artists would have to complain. Yes. And artists would have to learn a lot about copyright in order to have the prospect of a successful complaint.
Would this tribunal have the powers of a court?
To a large extent, yes. People haven't quite worked it through yet. The bill itself is over 50 pages long. The tribunal provisions, compared to the rest of the bill at any rate, are reasonably well written, but you still have a procedure where you have to have a complaint, you've got to substantiate your complaint, the defendant will have the opportunity to reply. Where the reply is fair use, then you're going to sit with a fact-based assessment of, is this fair use or not? Does it fall under one of the illustrative purposes? Bear in mind, the purposes are illustrative. There can be purposes in addition to those that are listed in the bill. So, and then does it meet the factors of the fair use test? It's a deep factual inquiry in every case. And this poor tribunal could end up being completely overloaded from day one.
I'm sure. Andrew, one of the interesting terms that have cropped up here is the panorama exception. Can you perhaps explain a little about what that entails?
The panorama exception, well, there is already a panorama exception in the Act as it stands for the benefit of films and TV broadcasts. And this relates to artistic works that stand in public places. So if you are a sculptor that has sculpted something for a public space, and a TV camera pans over your work, in the course of reporting on something else, then that's not an infringement of copyright. That's already covered by the Act. The bill now proposes to adapt that to bring in a number of different circumstances and to apply the exception to all kinds of media, specifically photographs, so that when a photograph is taken of or in a public area that happens to capture a visual artwork in which there's copyright, then the exception would apply in that case as well. There's no permission needed. It's probably something that is not that serious, but certainly something that artists who work literally in the public space will have to be aware of in the future going forwards. Our problem with the panorama exception is that it came about as a result of what I believe was an incredibly misleading presentation by one interested party. Obviously, that interested party was not representing creators. And I say it was misleading because they illustrated a photo of the Voortrekker Monument and then a photo of the bust of Nelson Mandela that stands in Parliament and saying, why can I take a photo of the Voortrekker Monument, but I can't take a photo of the bust of Nelson Mandela in Parliament? Mm-hmm. Now, and therefore we must have a panorama exception. Now, the reason for it was an incredibly emotive argument that was factually wrong. The reason why you can take a photograph of the Voortrekker Monument, or for that matter, the Apartheid Museum in Johannesburg, is because it's an architectural work, and a photo of an architectural work is by definition not a copy. So the illustration that they made was wrong, but it was there to tug at the heartstrings, and it was successful. And the amendment appears in the latest version of the bill. The problem is that visual arts organizations were never consulted, that provision was never opened up for further public consultation. Visual arts associations, thinking of organizations like VANSA or SANAVA, were simply never given the opportunity to say, well, is this acceptable or not? So the problem with the panorama exception is one more of process than of substance, and it's something that we would be interested to hear from artists and what they think.
Yeah, well, it seems that perhaps artists are not going to have the opportunity to make submissions. That's the way it's going.
Well, I think there will be an opportunity at the end of the process. The portfolio committee is considering a large number of things at the moment, and a lot will depend on what happens in the last half of November. But if this were to go ahead with the panorama exception, for example, being some, and the galleries exceptions, for instance, there is always the opportunity to petition the president not to sign the bill, but to return it to the National Assembly. So this is something that certainly visual artists may want to have a look at and maybe write about in the coming weeks and months.
Now, one of the objectives of the new Act is quite clearly stated, and that is to ensure that artists get their fair payment of royalties. Can we delve into that topic, and if you could perhaps try and clarify, how is that objective now going to be better achieved with this amendment?
In a sense, it's a new right never been that important to visual artists, because they've traditionally, or many of them don't deal in their copyright. They are more used to dealing in their work. And there's another interesting thing that's in the bill that I'm sure we'll get to. So when it comes to royalties, Traditionally, if somebody wanted to take a copy of or make a copy of an artwork, there would be a permission request. Very often the permission would be granted with no expectation of a fee at all. Say, yes, absolutely, go ahead. Also, you have the Dalro licensing. It is here where royalties have never been a problem because Dalro's got to account to the visual artists it represents for their royalties. The problem, of course, related to the music sector, and what has happened here is that the bill extrapolates solutions intended for the music sector across all forms of copyright works. So it doesn't really address any need that visual artists had until now. What it does do, unfortunately, is it will attach to every use of a copyright work a right to a royalty. So that actually means that the visual artist can no longer give a royalty-free permission, can no longer say to a person, listen, go ahead, make the copy. I've got no problem with that. The artist can never waive his or her right to a royalty and can always come back and say, well, I thought about it and I think actually you should pay me a royalty, and if you don't pay me, I'll go to the tribunal. What that does is to discourage people from making use of artists' works. So where artists would have been, I think very often that's the case, quite happy to freely consent to their works being reproduced for certain specific purposes that they agreed to, there's no longer going to be that demand because people are going to be worried about sitting with a claim for a royalty at some point in time in the future. It's a very ill-advised provision, and it ties in with that contract override provision I referred to earlier.
Now, just to clarify, if an artist creates an original piece of work and that is sold by a gallery or the artist sells it, is that the end of the artist's rights? In other words, they get paid for a painting that they have sold or is sold by a gallery. Is that the end of the matter?
Under the current law, yes and no. Because under the current law, and that will continue, the fact that an artist sells an artwork does not mean that the copyright is sold. The copyright, with the exception of a couple of circumstances, always remains with the artist. So, but when it goes to the physical work itself, yes, that is the end of it. The artist sells the work and, gets no more income from it again. If in the future somebody wants to make reproduction or a series of prints or put it on their website or whatever, then they do have to come back to the artist for permission in respect of the copyright of the work. But so far as the physical work is concerned, under the current law, that would be over. The bill proposes a new right called the resale royalty right. It's a right that exists in other countries of the world, notably the United Kingdom, Australia, France, a number of countries in Africa and Latin America, which says that when an artwork is resold through an art professional, such as a gallery or an auction house, then a small percentage of the sale price must be paid to the artist. So this is on the assumption that the artist's work increases in value over time, and this would be something that could potentially be very valuable to artists who become successful. I think the classic example that's often given is the struggling artist who hands over his or her paintings to pay the rent, as Vincent van Gogh did, and then many years later ends up being famous and the works sell for millions. And the idea is that the artist should benefit from the resale. This is a feature that is allowed by the Berne Convention. It's not obligatory, but it is something that one can bring into one's law. Unfortunately, with the bad comes with the good. This is also a provision that unfortunately has not been researched. There's been no impact assessment for it, even though it's obviously to the benefit of visual artists. Mm. They also made a major drafting mistake, because this resale has actually got nothing to do with copyright. It's not a right of copyright. It's related to works in which copyright subsists, but it's not a right of copyright. Mm. So in drafting the bill, originally they made a couple of major mistakes from a technical perspective that identify this resale royalty right as a right of copyright, which in turn will probably make this a dead letter in the law, incapable of being used by anyone. So that is something that has been commented on by a number of people, because clearly the resale royalty right is something that visual arts organizations have asked for many years. And it just has to be correctly drafted, and somebody must just do an impact assessment to see what its effect will be. It is encouraging that the government has decided to look at it, and I'm sure it's something that visual artists would want to encourage. But it is necessary for Parliament to fix these provisions before it can really be effective.
So a resale royalty right, in effect, has no place in a copyright legislation. It should be dealt with separately.
In many countries of the world, it is dealt with by a separate act, but there's no problem in having it in a separate chapter of the Copyright Act. As long as it's a loose standing chapter, that can be done.
It just strikes me, perhaps a small practical instance with this resale right, is that one often gets the situation where a gallery will sell a painting and be very guarded about who has purchased the painting. The gallery would obviously want to have close ties with that client, and it's of no real import as far as the gallery is concerned that the artist become aware of the purchaser. But in order to keep tabs on this right, an artist would be entitled to demand full disclosure of who has bought the painting, and so they, in theory anyway, can keep tabs on that work.
Keeping tabs of the work is difficult. The liability really rests on the entity making the sale. So it's the gallery or the auction house. It's which is responsible for making the return and paying the money. I think anonymity of purchasers and even sellers could still be guaranteed. But the interaction is with the art professional. And very often in countries around the world, these resale rights are handled by collecting societies and not by individual artists.
I see.
Which helps with the logistics.
I know a lot of artists would like to know who has bought their painting. But anyway, that's something, I guess, that artists and galleries will never see eye to eye on. Commissions of photographs or commissions of paintings, what is the legal relationships and rights that are generated if a work is commissioned, let's say a painting is commissioned from an artist?
Well, there is a provision in the Act that applies to only a very limited number of artworks, specifically portraits. So it's not all artworks. It also applies to photographs. Mm. And it says that where a portrait is commissioned or a photograph is commissioned and the person doing the commissioning pays in money or money's worth, then the first copyright owner is that person who made the commission. So that is an exception on the normal rule that the person who creates the work is the copyright owner. And it applies to only very limited cases. Specifically, photographers felt that this was unfair because they took the photograph. Yes, they were paid for it, and now suddenly they find that the work is exploited by, let's say, the newspaper house that bought it from them, and they get no more money for it. Bear in mind, though, that a commissioning agreement is still an agreement, and payment of money doesn't necessarily have to be a one-off payment. People could have provided for royalty payments as well. But I suppose the balance of power just hasn't allowed for it in most cases. Now, a number of people feel that these commissioning provisions are outmoded. In England, they've repealed them altogether. So there's no longer this commissioning situation where the person doing the commissioning is the first copyright owner. This is actually one of the provisions where there was a little bit of research done by the government, and they found that photographers were particularly disadvantaged by not having at least a back-to-back license, allowing them to make reprints of the photos that they took, that the copyright was sitting with somebody else. And they felt that this was something to be addressed. Instead, however, an incredibly complex provision has come in requiring agreements and all sorts of things. And a couple of us have said, well, you know, if it's becoming so difficult, why don't you just repeal the commissioning provision so that if a client of a photographer or a client of an artist who is drawing a portrait really wants to have the copyright, then they should negotiate it for it just like they would for any other artwork. But instead, we're sitting with this incredibly complex provision requiring to and fro and notice and all sorts of things, which are really going to become impractical.
Andre, I want to just ask you if you could perhaps just outline what are the next steps regarding the life of this bill. When is it anticipated that it will be signed into law?
The next meeting of the Portfolio Committee has not yet been set, to my knowledge. We expect it to happen in the third week of November or thereabouts. At that meeting, they will receive further opinions from the Department of Justice on points relating to the Constitution and from their technical advisor, someone at the University of Cape Town, on compliance with the three-step test of the Berne Convention. They will then do one of two things. They will either come to the conclusion that there are major flaws in the version that they still have and make quite intrusive changes, who knows, even decide to reject the bill, or they'll decide to go ahead with it. Let's not try and call that one. If they go ahead with it in whatever form, the plan is that they would introduce it to Parliament in the last week of November. We don't know if that time schedule will slip or not. If they introduce it to the National Assembly, I have no doubt that it will pass and that it will also pass the National Council of Provinces. It would then be sent up to the president for signature. The president at that point has got one of two options. Either he can sign it and the bill becomes law, or he can refer the bill back to the National Assembly if he has concerns that it is not compliant with the Constitution. And certainly my opinion and also the opinions of others indicate that there are major constitutional issues here, particularly relating to the right to property, seeing that intellectual property and copyright is in fact a right of property, and even the right to trade. So the National Assembly would have to reconsider the constitutional provisions of the bill. If notwithstanding that they still think the bill meets the requirements of the Constitution, they send it back to the president again and ask him to sign. The president then has the opportunity of sending the bill together with an instruction to the Constitutional Court to give an opinion on the constitutionality of the bill in relation to the points that he is concerned about. And then the outcome depends on the decision of the Constitutional Court. In this case, of course, we also have an election that we expect to happen in April or May next year, which means that the term of Parliament is very quickly coming to an end. And if the bill is still in the National Assembly at the time of that the term of Parliament ends, then it goes stale and they would have to start afresh in the new Parliament. So that is where we stand at the moment, and we can expect a lot of developments from the end of November onwards.
Well, Andre, I want to thank you very much for taking time out from your busy schedule to chat to me today and to try and help us understand what is actually going on and what are the interests of artists of all stripes in this process. And we're going to watch it with a lot of interest, and perhaps if you can keep me up to date on developments, I can mention that to people that are interested in this process. But, Andre, thanks very much.
You're welcome, and thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
It was a great pleasure. I want to thank my special guest today, Andre Marburg, for his valuable insight into the topic of the Copyright Amendment Bill. You can also follow the subject, which I will be referring to from time to time, on my blog at Malcolm Dewey Fine Art. If you've enjoyed the show and found it useful, please share that with your friends. Subscribe on your favorite channel. You can also find the podcast now also on Spotify. Then be notified of the next episode. If you're an artist looking for more information about how to paint, or if you're a beginner looking how to start your painting lessons, please visit my website at malcolmdeweyfineart.com. where you can find an extensive range of painting courses, or you may want to join me for art coaching online as well. I look forward to meeting you and helping you with your art lessons. So until next time, please join me again on an Artist Journey podcast, where we will talk more about the art life, and we'll chat again soon. Cheers for now.